Thank you for joining another episode of Tech and Main Presents, where we bring you the best insights from today's leaders and experts in technology. Today, we will be speaking with Jeremy Snyder of Firetail. Jeremy, welcome to the Tech and Main Presents podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Sean. It's a real pleasure to be here.
Oh, the pleasure is mine, sir. We're glad that you carved some time out of your day to be with us. And so, Jeremy, with that, why don't you go ahead and share your background with our audience?
Yeah, sure. I actually spent the first kind of half of my career as an IT and cybersecurity practitioner. So really hands-on keyboard, feet and arms in data centers and cutting up my fingers, rack mounting servers from 1997 till about 2004.
Okay.
Went through quite a ride during that period. Sorry, till 2006. Went through quite a ride through that period. We were part of the dot-com boom. We were a SaaS company at the time, or we were becoming a SaaS company, I should say. I joined and we were like 30 people. We grew up to 250. Then September 11th, unfortunately, happened. And then the dot-com bust and we went down to 80 people. And we actually kind of had to reboot the entire business. We grew it back up. And thankfully, we were able to find a successful outcome for the business in early 2005. Tons of learning experiences along the way, had more than our share of cybersecurity incidents along the way. I'm happy to get into some of those if there's interest in time in today's episode. But I did that. I did kind of two more stops in cybersecurity and IT from the practitioner standpoint before realizing I myself didn't really want to carry a pager anymore 24 hours a day and transitioned over into more of kind of the dark side, so to speak. When I say that, what I really mean is more kind of customer facing salesy roles. So first with Amazon Web Services starting in 2010, at the time when cloud was really a very, very new thing. And we got a lot of skepticism from people. We got a lot of people who didn't believe that it wasn't just Amazon having too many spare servers and they were looking to rent out excess capacity. I kid you not, Sean, I used to get that question all the time.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yeah. It was really hard for people to wrap their heads around that there was this data center that they were never going to see. They were never going to enter. They were never going to see or touch a piece of hardware. And yet they should trust that for mission critical production systems. That in itself was really, I think, a leap of faith for a lot of people. But then you add on top of that some of the changes that really happened in terms of thinking about like architecture and thinking about like, hey, it's not really a server so much anymore. It's a virtual machine. And by the way, it might die at some point. So you got to think about like load balancing and failover architecture. And things like auto-scaling were completely new concepts back then. But anyway, I've kind of stayed in the cloud ecosystem ever since, went through a couple more stops consulting, helping customers migrate. And then I think really part of what brings me here today is starting in 2016, I started to go really deep into cloud security. So first with a software company called DivvyCloud, we were a early stage startup at that point in time. We just had just a handful of customers. We kind of grew the business about 20x over a four-year period, and we were acquired 2 months into lockdown in 2020. Coming out of that, I had the fortune of spending about a year and a half doing M&A on the other side of the table. So the company that acquired us, we then went on to do three more acquisitions in 2021. And then when kind of late 2021, I started to feel the calling to get back into startup life, left that organization, started Firetail in early 2022, took a little bit of time off in between. And Firetail is really kind of what I think of as the evolution of cloud security. We're focused on something called API security, which may be a little bit ahead of where a lot of customers are today. It may not be like something that they're really concerned about at this point in time. I'm more than happy to kind of go into that area in more detail, whatever makes sense for the listeners. But really, we're focused on kind of that next wave of attack surface that people need to worry about. And we really think that is the API for a lot of organizations.
So, Jeremy, thank you for sharing all of that with us. So what I hear you saying, sir, is that Firetail is kind of the Wayne Gretzky, if you will.
Going where the puck is going to be.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. That's cool. That's really cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really exciting for us. There's so much to do. And I think it's one of the things that makes it fun for me just on a personal level is there's so much learning. Even with cloud security, there's a lot going on. And with the cloud providers, they move really fast. Like you look at Amazon, Microsoft, Google, they're rolling out new stuff every week. And so we were always kind of pushing ourselves to stay abreast of what they were doing and trying to be ahead so that our customers, the new thing that gets announced at the AWS reInvent that thousands of customers are using a week later, we need a response for that. We need to give them security controls and policies and so on. That was even that kind of speed of innovation became somewhat understood. What we're doing right now in API security is not a widely understood attack surface. The breach vectors are very different. There's a lot of application logic constructs that we have to explore. And so for me, I'm actually having to learn a lot again, which is super exciting. It's very stimulating. It's very enjoyable work on a daily basis. So I'm loving it.
Oh, so Jeremy, I mean, you totally answered, you know, the question about what has you excited about what you're doing on a daily basis, but I want to drill down a little bit. It's not often that we have a founder or senior executive talk about the fact that a part of their daily responsibility is learning, right? And
yeah,
and staying ahead of the game. Touch on that a little more for us.
Yeah. I actually find it kind of surprising that you don't hear that from a lot of executives, because I think for, at least for me and a lot of the companies that I've been at, there's a lot of experimentation that goes on. I think anybody who comes in saying that they have the recipe for success, maybe they do if they're in a very established kind of business or a very established niche within technology. But otherwise, there's so much changing on a regular basis that you kind of have to be constantly learning. So for me, I think a lot of it goes to, you know, we just kind of, I'll give an example that kind of illustrates what we're doing.
Okay.
On our website, you can find in the footer of our website, firetail.io, shameless plug. But on the footer of that website, you can find something that we call the API Data Breach Tracker. And so every time we see a security incident related to APIs, we dive in. So we try to read as much as we can about it. Usually over the next, let's say, week or so, it'll get analyzed on a few different websites and so on. Maybe in some forums, people will discuss it, what's going on, et cetera. So you kind of try to dive in and understand all the information that comes out. And it's always kind of challenging because you're dealing with partial information. Very few organizations will come out and tell you like, hey, here's everything that happened. Kudos to those that do, by the way, those that have security incidents and are right, super transparent about them. I think that's really, really helpful. And for me as a customer of those organizations, actually establishes a ton of trust. I know a lot of people say like, hey, oh, you had a breach, we need to move away. No, no, no. Almost everybody will have a breach at some point. The key is, what do you learn from it? How do you improve your organization, your security practices, et cetera? At least that's my view on it. So when we kind of, yeah. So when we go through these analyses of what happened, we try to understand what was the primary breach vector? What was the secondary breach vector? What are the knock-on effects from that? What data actually got exfiltrated, if any? Was this kind of like lab proof of concept that went through responsible disclosure? Was this lab proof of concept that actually got out into the wild, or was this actually a bad actor? And we see all of that in trying to understand that and learn from that, and then take away from that, okay, what does that mean for us as we're building a product and we're serving our customers that we can help them understand? It's not just about maybe a simple checklist, it's A plus B. Turns out that right now in APIs, and I think this is true for a lot of security incidents, it's almost never one thing on its own. It's usually a combination of factors. And I know this is an audio podcast and the listeners won't see it, but the smile on your face said it all to me. And you've been, I'm sure you've been through this with your own businesses and your own customers. It's a combination of factors. And almost always one of those factors is a human. Whether that was something in the design of the application or whether that was something in a ball that got dropped somewhere in the operations, who knows what. But that's where I really see a lot of that learning. It's kind of staying on top of what's going on, staying on top of what we're learning about every week or whenever these things happen, taking that back into the product. And yeah, like I said, I'm surprised that you don't hear that more from senior executives, because I think that is such a crucial part of anything at the cutting edge or forefront of technology.
Well, Jeremy, this is just my opinion, but I think what probably happens in the mind of an executive is, hey, I should be leading strategic improvements and I should be planning our next corporate retreat. And if the VCs that have funded us hear that I'm spending time reviewing the latest newsletter or the news or the latest alert, right, then they're probably going to wonder, well, how am I spending my time? Right. But I think the better thing is what you mentioned, which is that level of transparency to me is a competitive advantage. Like,
yeah,
It honestly is, because what it lets me know is, okay, I've got someone at the highest levels of my supplier that are literally in the trenches with me, right? And that are reviewing and gaining understanding of the same things that my team is looking at, right? And so that just, man, you can't buy that credibility, Jeremy.
Well, look, the credibility is a great aspect, but I actually still think the learning and what it can bring to your customers is a more positive impact. So that's why I invest my time there. That's why the rest of our executive team invests their time there as well. We still go through on a regular basis calls with customers that our CTO comes in, our VP of product comes in. And sometimes it's just for a regular support event because we see something that we didn't expect to hear. And something with the product didn't work the way we wanted it to or the way we expected it to. You can't get better than learning from what's happening and what your customers are saying. And I think you've got to invest that time. And actually, it really benefits the whole organization when the people at the top set that example that they're learning too. They're human too. They want to engage with the customers as well. So that's our view on it. And I think the way you framed it as well is very much the case.
Oh, that's awesome. All right. So we've touched on it a little bit, but I want to have you speak to it more. Jeremy, what are the major issues that your clients are bringing to Firetail?
Yeah, it's really about APIs. And so just to kind of frame that for a second, because I know not everybody necessarily understands what these things are. We probably hear about them and we know there are these things called API calls, but let me just put it in context for the listeners for a second here. Right now, there is a huge volume of internet traffic. We all know that. But did you know that actually 4/5 of it, over 80%, is not human to computer traffic? It's actually computer to computer traffic.
Did not know that.
That is APIs. That is one system talking to another. And I'll give you an example that kind of will make it more concrete, for a lot of people, just as, let's say, regular consumers. Every time you pick up your phone, you open a mobile app, and let's say you place an order for food delivery. First of all, your phone is connecting to the backend system over an API. So that mobile app on your phone, almost nothing is actually happening on the phone itself. So you send, let's say, a login request, you enter a username, password, whatever credentials, that call to authenticate you as say, hey, this is Sean connecting to, let's just pick DoorDash as an example. That's an API call to authenticate Sean. Now, the next thing that happens, getting your location. Actually, your phone just sends GPS coordinates to another service over another API that then pins down your location and shows you a list of restaurants in your area or restaurants that will deliver to you or whatever it is that, right? And then the following request, hey, I want to pull up this menu. I want to order these items, et cetera. All that's happening there is a local display. You choose a number of things. They go into a temporary shopping cart on your phone. But once you click submit, the logic of that transaction is again happening in the cloud, transmitted from your phone to the backend over an API. And by the way, once it's received by DoorDash, that kicks off a whole secondary set of API calls between DoorDash and a payment processor, DoorDash and the restaurant to submit and confirm the order and get things like the timing of the order, and then DoorDash to a delivery driver who's going to pick it up and then bring it to you. All of those communications are over APIs. So what does that imply and what's the risk there? Well, first of all, I think you'll agree that actually in that transaction, we had a number of, first of all, critical business processes, right? Payment processing. We also had a lot of very sensitive data, your credit card, your name, your address, all of that has been sent back and forth between multiple third parties over APIs. This is actually the basis for the structure of a lot of the modern internet. And like I said at the beginning, 80% plus of traffic is actually these types of calls going back and forth between different systems. So our customers come to us and they are basically in one way or the other, they're either having a lot of internal APIs that talk to each other. Those are different, let's say different applications that talk to each other, or they're interacting with third parties and they're interchanging critical data or they're, let's say, kicking off critical business transactions and processes over APIs. Our customers come to us because they're concerned. Maybe they had an incident. Maybe they're trying to get ahead of the incident, but they're concerned that something could go wrong in those systems. They're typically looking for a couple of things. First, they want to understand all the APIs they have. That actually turns out to be a challenge because what ends up happening in a lot of organizations is they tell a developer, let's just imagine Sean's a developer. They say, hey, Sean, go build a mobile food delivery app. And you're like, awesome, I'm going to do this. And you stitch together all those things. And before it, as we just went through, you've got 20 APIs. And a lot of the times there are human failures in terms of, like, let's say, lack of documentation or a developer who didn't give, let's say, the full list of APIs to the security team. That's something that just happens. It's just kind of normal human behavior, right? So first thing they'll say is, I want to just know all the APIs that I have. Internal APIs, what third parties I'm communicating with over API, that's step one. Second step is, I want to kind of watch that traffic happen. I want to see, are good security practices being followed in all of those cases? And we can look at things like network traffic, and we can ensure that there is, let's say, an authentication token in place. We can make sure that we're only interacting with the APIs that we expect to be interacting with. So once we've kind of got that initial visibility, we know, okay, these are our third-party partners and vendors. And then all of a sudden you see a new one, what's happened there, right? So those types of events that you're looking for, things that are maybe out of the normal, things that maybe aren't following good security guidelines in terms of API communications, those are a lot of what our customers are looking for. There's more layers to it, but fundamentally they're looking for kind of visibility, observability of their API traffic, and observing that it actually conforms to kind of security best practices.
Okay. And that dovetails nicely into this next thought around that's what Firetail does then. Is exactly what you described.
Yeah. I mean, there's one more aspect to it that I will point out, which is we've actually seen that a lot of the challenges with APIs are on the application side. And so one of the things that we've actually done, in addition to kind of what I just described with the visibility and observability, we actually make an open source library that developers can include as they're building API-centric applications. And they can include that. And what it will do is it will take something called an OpenAPI specification file that describes how an API should work, and it'll actually check API calls in real time. So they do need to include it. There is a little bit of integration code that goes into it. It's about 15 lines. It's currently available for four languages: Python, Node.js, which is a JavaScript language, Ruby, and Golang. And there's also an AWS serverless framework that we use for it. It's called this Lambda Layer. That's an open source package. So in addition to kind of the services that I mentioned earlier, we do want to make it easier for developers to check that their APIs are secured.
Okay. So Jeremy, I'm loving what you are putting down. So not only are you serving your customers, but you are serving the developer community as well, right? The greater population. You're like, here are some tools and resources. Not very many lines of code, but if we can be of assistance to you, here's something that you can use to make your life a little easier and help yourself sleep a little better. Oh, that's awesome. So yeah. I mean, and Jeremy, this and I don't want to sound corny, but I mean, this is the first conversation that I am remembering where, like I said, the transparency on the front end that we talked about, right? The tools for the developer community. It's like, if basically you're a giver, Jeremy. that's what I'm picking up on.
It's one of the things that I hope we are. It is something that we try to be. And around the open source, I think the way I'll put it, there's two things that really come to mind. First is, these things are critical. And there's so much data being sent back and forth over APIs, including things like home addresses and personal data and whatnot. If we can just make it easier for developers to build more secure APIs, that's a win. That's why we put the open source stuff out there. I don't care if you use our service or not. Obviously, I hope that your organization will at some point. But if you, as a developer, we can be the easy button for you to ensure that the API you're building has some security basics in it, awesome. Second thing is, this is going back to about 3 years ago. We were just entering the pandemic, right? We were just kind of going into lockdown around this time, maybe like 3 years and 2 weeks ago, just looking at the calendar here. And I had honestly almost reached a point in my career where I was thinking about getting out of cybersecurity. And I was thinking, like, it's a thankless job a lot of the time. And I know that the people who do this are doing their best. And a lot of organizations, they're perceived as the department of no, they're perceived as the department of, like, we can't do these things because risk this or risk that or data handling this or whatever it is. Then we go through the pandemic. And one of the things that made me really reassess my own priorities for my career and kind of made me recommit to cybersecurity, frankly, was a couple of our customers were really responsible for a lot of the pandemic response and for a lot of the things that helped get us as a community out of the pandemic, right? Things like vaccination development and so on, and distribution and everything. And we actually saw that there was this huge wave of cyber attacks against those types of organizations.
I know.
It's crazy. Like, who's trying to disrupt the people who are trying to help us?
Yes, Jeremy, exactly.
Yeah. But what we, thankfully, I think to the credit of our development team, our operations team, everybody in our organization at the time, we kept at it. We kept working with our customers. We kept innovating. And what that allowed, it allowed them to innovate. And it became this real enabling kind of technology. And it actually made me reassess the role of security in a lot of organizations. And then I realized, you know, maybe I'm not the scientist. I barely passed thermodynamics. I was terrible in physics and like organic chemistry and second year biology. That was it for science for me, right? Okay, that wasn't going to be my career. So I'm not that researcher. I'm not that scientist. But if like my role can be to help enable those people's work, that's also something that actually is meaningful and it's impactful and it helps a lot of people. And so that was really an experience that kind of made me, to your point, and I certainly wouldn't think of myself as a giver, but it made me realize like the value of the things that we can do to help other people move forward.
Oh, Jeremy, look, you've got me all in my feelings over here, man. you talk about being in cybersecurity, being in technology. Look, my wife's a teacher, and so I think she and other first responders, right? They understand, like, very few people are patting you on the back on a daily basis.
Yeah. Right? Yeah.
You're literally expected to just show up, do what you do, right?
Yep.
Have little to no complaints.
Yeah.
Right. And for teachers, you bring a lot of that home in the way of grading and planning. And then you wake up and you do it again.
Right? Yeah.
And so you have to be committed.
Yes.
Right.
Absolutely.
You have to be called to it. And so, Jeremy, that very real situation of you thinking of getting out of the game, but then the pandemic and the people that you were serving that were serving the community. Look, that to me is poetic. Look, Jeremy, I want to push pause because I want to do another episode with you because there's so much that we haven't even really gotten to. So literally this will just be a comma. It'll
okay.
Not be a period, but I do want to give you an opportunity to share with our audience until the next time. What's the best way for people to get in contact with you, follow you on social media, et cetera?
Yeah. I'm not really on Twitter. Our company isn't really on Twitter. We put some stuff out there, but please don't like follow and send us DMs there because frankly, they probably won't be seen. Look, we're just firetail.io and that's just fire like a fire and tail like a bird's tail, not like a night, not like a story. So just firetail.io, reach out to us there. Anything you submit there will be seen by a human and actually will be responded to. That's probably the easiest way. Otherwise, you can find our company on LinkedIn. You can find me on LinkedIn. And I definitely look forward to having another conversation with you, Sean. I've really enjoyed this as well.
Yeah, same here, Jeremy. And like I said, yeah, we'll pick another date and time to this, but I can't thank you enough. I have thoroughly enjoyed this, Jeremy.
It's been my pleasure, Sean.
And TechMA Presents family, until next time, thank you for joining us. And thank you as always for listening. Goodbye for now.